The big story this morning, it's been a busy several days abroad for President Trump. He was, of course, in Brussels last week for the NATO summit before heading to the UK for meetings with Prime Minister Theresa May and Queen Elizabeth. Today, he met with Russian President Vladimir Putin in Helsinki. Joining me for our weekly look at the top international stories is the BBC's Rich Preston. And Rich, let's, of course, start in Finland. Bring us up to speed on the meeting between Presidents Trump and Putin.
Yes, Mark, one of the biggest international stories of the week. The two men have now met behind closed doors, no press. This is all happening, as you said, in Helsinki, the capital of Finland, which incidentally last year celebrated 100 years of independence from Russia. Now, before the meeting, the two men said they wanted to use it as an opportunity to discuss important global issues. And President Trump said he hoped it would be the start of an extraordinary relationship. Mr. Trump tweeted to say that relations between Russia and the US have been damaged by years of American stupidity. Now, the Russian Foreign Ministry retweeted that, adding the comment, "We agree." For many ordinary Russians, regardless of any promises made, the fact this meeting's even happening is already seen as a win for President Putin.
It's a diplomatic victory. Mr. Putin's accepted at highest level meeting the leader of the most powerful country in the world. And finally, for Russians, this is an opening door to possibly solving lots of small things for them, like Syria, conflict in Ukraine, and sanctions against Russia.
That's Famal Ismailov from the BBC's Russian service.
Rich, what should we be looking out for in the week ahead relative to this meeting?
Well, it's early days, Mark, but it's worth remembering that lots of things promised or agreed upon will have to be negotiated elsewhere before any final decisions are made. President Trump can't, for example, on his own, undo sanctions against Russia. That's something that Congress needs to get involved with. And drastic steps on things like Ukraine or Syria have to come through the United Nations. This is much more about the symbolism, and it follows recent big meetings, such as the G7, NATO, and the UK visit, during which Mr. Trump was seen to be critical of some of America's long-term allies. Then you get this meeting with Russia, which Mr. Trump praises, speaks highly of, and says he's looking forward to. So it's seen once again on the international stage as President Trump somewhat pressing that reset button on America's international relationships, some of which have seemingly been set in stone for decades, but suddenly seem very up in the air.
Rich, let's move to Africa, where there's a significant story developing there in that Ethiopian Airlines is going to be starting flights to Eritrea this week. Why is this such a big deal?
Yeah, it might make you wonder, two kind of East African countries flying between each other, what's important about this? Well, it is a real marker of change in relationships between the two countries. Let me explain why. Ethiopia and Eritrea were caught in a bitter territorial dispute in the late 90s, which resulted in the deaths of about 80,000 people. It was Africa's deadliest border war. Now, a ruling on the border was delivered in 2002, but Ethiopia never implemented it, so the two nations remained in a state of conflict for 20 years. Now, that hostility has thawed in the last couple of weeks, with both leaders saying they want to move forwards and that they'll implement the Commission's ruling. So this has really opened up ties between the two countries. In fact, just today, the Eritrean embassy in the Ethiopian capital, Addis Ababa, has reopened. Our correspondent, Emmanuel Agunza, was there as thousands lined the streets to celebrate.
Celebrating what they are calling a great day, because for long they have not been able to have these relations with country that they share so much in common. Over the last week, we've seen that the telephone lines between the countries, which have been cut off for 20 years, have been reconnected. And we've been talking to people who have not spoken to their families for 10 years, 15 years, and they could make that telephone call. So quite a lot of optimism in the country.
Now, Mark, it's been impossible to travel directly between the two countries for the past two decades. So these flights restarting is a key marker of the progress being made.
Is there any wider significance to these flights and maybe the reopening of relations between these countries?
Yeah, well, for one, at home, being able to reduce defence spending in each country could mean resources being redirected towards other areas, so education, health, building new roads, etc. The deal could also give landlocked Ethiopia access to Eritrea's ports, which would be vital for trade in Ethiopia. But you've got to look at the wider region as well and the potential for this peace deal to ripple out. These two countries are nestled in a corner of Africa, battling periods of unrest. Somalia, Sudan, South Sudan are all neighbours. So these two leaders shaking hands could be a good thing for diplomacy across the East African region.
All right. Finally, Rich, this morning, the Indian Supreme Court is expected to deliver an important ruling on the subject of privacy rights this week. What's happening in this case?
Yes, that's right. It's expected to give its judgment on a controversial scheme known as Aadhaar. This is the Indian government's biometric ID scheme. It was launched in 2009 as a voluntary program sold as a way to tackle benefit fraud, but it's become the world's most ambitious digital ID program. And more than a billion Indians now have a 12-digit ID number that's linked to things like their fingerprints and their iris ID scan. That number is increasingly needed for common everyday things like carrying out bank transactions or getting a new SIM card for your cell phone.
Why is this seen as so controversial?
Well, Mark, opponents to the scheme say it's a gross violation of privacy and they're worried about the ability of the state to supervise and potentially control its citizens. They also highlight the risk of data leaking if there's a hack or if the government doesn't handle the data carefully. In fact, in January this year, reports that people's personal data were being sold online for as little as $7. Now, the authorities say it's an efficient way of running society and they argue that it's more secure by linking something so unique as your fingerprint to your bank account. So the court's been hearing petitions from both sides as to whether the use of Aadhaar should be made mandatory for certain services, and their judgment on whether the scheme infringes a right to privacy is expected on Wednesday. But India is the world's largest democracy, so we're expecting governments around the world to keep an eye on this ruling and use that as something of a barometer for things in their own countries.
All right, that's the BBC's Rich Preston. Rich, as always, good to talk to you. Thank you.
Likewise, Mark. Thank you.